So I'm expecting a lot of good questions this evening. In fact, I was even entertaining the possibility of just having you ask questions, because you're such a good group. But then a little child would like that, so we're going to do something, show you something. I understand you've been beginning, at least the ladies have begun a Bhagavad Gita study, very beginning stage. And I want to ask you a few Bhagavad Gita questions. It's a quiz. Okay. From the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, it's described that there are five main subjects that are covered in the whole of Bhagavad Gita. And if you know these five subjects, you know the whole Bhagavad Gita. What are those five subjects? Mahashakti is not included. You can't answer this question. The five main subjects of Bhagavad Gita. You know all five of them or some of them?
Five of them.
Okay. Why don't you give two of them?
Ishwara, Jiva.
Ishwara means controller. And Jiva is a living entity. Two down and three to go. One more topic out of the five?
Diamond.
Kala, time. And karma, activity. Four down and one to go. Prakriti, material nature. Very good. Okay. There's another question. How many chapters are there in Bhagavad Gita?
18,
that was easy, right? Okay, here's another one. 18 divided by 3 is?
6.
Okay, that was easy too. So, the topics, the main subject matters in Bhagavad Gita are 3. Bhakti is, of course, the main subject of the entire Bhagavad Gita, but its focus is on chapters 7 through 12. Because at the end of chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, by all means be a yogi, and the best of all yogis is a bhakti yogi. Shraddhavan bhajate yomam samayukta uttama. Mataha, the uttama form of yoga is Shraddhavan Bhajate Yoma. Devotional service with faith is the topmost form of yoga. So at the beginning of chapter 7, Krishna says, now I'm going to explain to you how to do it. And he does that over a period of the middle 6 chapters of Bhagavad Gita. So the very next chapter of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13. And in chapter 13, Arjuna asks Krishna to describe 6 different topics more elaborately than he has already explained. Those 6 topics, I'll give them to you. They're in 3 sets of 2. Purusha and Prakriti. Gyanam and Gyayam. And Chetra and Chetra Gya. So, you all know what those terms mean. When Krishna is describing Prakriti, that's material nature, he describes the interaction between material nature and the jiva. I'm going to recite the verse. Listen carefully. I'll say it a couple of times because it's the basis of chapter 14. Because we're going to be discussing chapter 14. Chapter 14 is the modes of material nature. So the chapter 14 is prompted by chapter 13, text 22. The verse is Purusha Prakritisto hi Bhunkte Prakriti Jan Gunan Karanam Gunasangosya Sad Asad Yoni Janmasu. Most important line is the last line, where it's essentially saying the living entity is responsible for his own good fortune and misfortune. He's responsible because he's associating with Prakriti in the mood of trying to be the enjoyer of Krishna's Prakriti. Prakriti means nature. Prakriti also, in a Sanskrit sense, means that which is enjoyed. And that which is enjoyed by Purusha, the enjoyer. Purusha and Prakriti. Those are these, because these are two of the questions that Arjuna asked Krishna to explain. What is Purusha? What is Prakriti? So Prakriti is that which is enjoyed. But if the living entity, because the energy is Krishna's energy, if the living entity takes the position of Krishna, trying to be the enjoyer of Prakriti, Bhunkte Prakriti Jan Gunan, in the imitation role of Purusha, Purusha Prakriti Stohi, situated in Prakriti, the living entity tries to be the enjoyer of Prakriti, then Karanam, that means cause. Karana means causation. Guna sangosya, by association with the gunas, with the modes of nature. Because of that enjoying spirit of trying to be the enjoyer of Prakriti according to particular modes of nature, the living entity then meets with the various good circumstances and misfortunes in life. Chapter 14 is an expansion of that one verse. Chapter 14, what I'm going to do is right now give you quickly a little chapter summary, and then I'm going to put on the projector and we'll take you through chapter 14, Bhagavad Gita, with a PowerPoint presentation. And I'll preface the PowerPoint presentation by saying it was put together for a children's Gita camp. So that in 2 weeks' time, children can learn the chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Because you're adults, you can learn it in one night. But it's so good because there's pictures. As the kids would hear the verse, see the picture, and each day they would get, you know, the same presentation. By the third or fourth day, they would, knowing the picture that they saw the previous day, they would be able to say what the next verse is and what it means, associate the picture, the image, the visual image with the message, and by the end, they could give a class on the whole chapter and explain the chapter. They did so in three-dimensional crash. This child seems to want to give his own class. If there's something that can be done to keep him quiet, that's great. And if not, it's best if he goes out in the hall. You two can take turns showing him the door. Sounds very happy. Okay. Very good. Okay. Okay, so there's are several sections. The first is a Mahima section. The glories of this chapter, Krishna describes. It's better than any knowledge he's already given, and he's already given the most confidential knowledge. So what's better than most confidential knowledge? It's detailed knowledge that helps us understand transcendence. What's the conditioned life, and what is transcendental life, and how to get there. After that Mahima section, it's a very important section that describes how the living entity gets conditioned in the first place. Very important. In our commentary by Jiva Goswami, one of the most brilliant acharya commentators in the history of the world, he describes something very simple in one of his sandarbhas or commentaries on the Bhagavatam. Just as we use this example, all of us, probably without exception, came into this room through that door. Since we know that's how we came into the room, once we know that, we know how to get out of the room. Very simple logic. Jiva Goswami likewise reasons, if we know how we got in the material circumstance, it tells us very clearly how to get out. Because the end of chapter 14 is how to get out. But the beginning is how we got here. And how we got here is by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the seed-giving Father, Aham Bija Pratapita, the seed-giving Father of all living entities. Simply by his glancing over Prakriti, he impregnated Prakriti with all living entities. And then according to the desires and the karma of the living entity, they were awarded bodies. And then those bodies are being influenced by the modes of nature. And so we're going to then hear about how the mode of goodness acts, how the mode of passion acts, how the mode of goodness and ignorance acts, and how they compete for supremacy. We're going to then hear not only they act and upon the living entity and cause activity, but they also cause reaction for those activities, and there's different destinations according to the modes of nature with which you work. This destination, that destination, and it's all one. There's different destinations. Urdvam gacchanti sattvasta madhye tishtanti rajasa adho gacchanti tamasa. They're different destinations. And then there's further details, you'll see. Happiness in the modes of nature, food in the modes of nature, work in the modes of nature, charity in the modes of nature, and so many things according to the modes of nature. There's variety. Take your pick. And there's consequences for each of those choices that you make. So then Krishna winds it up saying, everyone's conditioned, except those who are in the liberated position. The conclusion of the chapter, Arjuna wants to know, very good question, three questions. Those who are situated in transcendence, what are their symptoms? How do they act? And how do they become liberated? How do they become situated beyond the modes of nature? That's most important. So we'll leave the best for last. We'll surprise you with what Krishna says, how one becomes liberated. That's the summary of the chapter. And I'll give you one more quiz question before we go into the chapter. What's the conventional meaning of the word Brahman? When you hear the word Brahman, what does that mean? What's the import? Brahman.
He who knows Brahman.
That's Brahmana, is he who knows Brahman. And what is Brahman?
Oh, maybe roaming around? Is it roaming around?
No. Brahman. Not Lord Brahma. Not a Brahmana. B-R-A-H-M-A. N. Brahman. That's a Brahmana Vaishnava. So there's three features of the Absolute Truth. I'll ask in a different way. Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Bhagavan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Paramatma is the feature of the Lord in the heart. And Brahman is all-pervading Absolute. Brahman, the all-pervading realm of spirit. Or, conventionally, that state of oneness. Brahman. Yes? So, next question. I'll supply the answer because this is a little technical. In this verse, the word Brahman is used in two different ways, and commonly in Sanskrit it's used in three different ways. But in this chapter it's used in two different ways. What are those three different ways? One, in the very beginning of the chapter, Krishna speaks of Mahad Brahman. Mahad Brahman is the material substance. Krishna says in the chapter, all living entities take birth in, they receive bodies. Souls don't take birth. That's already been declared in chapter 2. Souls don't take birth, but bodies take birth. They take birth, or they receive their forms, material forms, the coverings of the soul, within Nimhad Brahman, the great material elements. And there's another use of the term Brahman, and that's like Aham Brahmasmi. It indicates the position of the realm of spirit, or I am spirit, Aham Brahma Asmi. I am Brahman. So there's the Mahat Brahman, there's the realm of being or existence that's eternal, that's another sense of Brahman. At the end of this chapter, Krishna uses Brahman to indicate that third aspect of the Absolute Truth, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, this Brahman conception. Krishna says all beings come into existence coming from Brahman, and I am the Pratishtha of Brahman. I am the Pratishtha of Brahman. So what is Pratishtha? Just like we just had a very, very wonderful event in Alachua, Florida. They had a deity installation, and they performed Pran Pratishtha. You've heard that. Pran Pratishtha. It was a three-day ceremony for installing the deities of Krishna Balaram at our temple in Alachua. Heard about that, Purushakti? 3 days. I mean, they had like 5 yagyas going on in the course of those 3 days. After the 4th yagya, they were entering the final yagya. There was a torrential downpour for 3 hours. And those of you that know North Florida, it's dry. It never rains. But there was rain. And why was there rain? Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita why there's rain. When there's performance of yagya, there's rain. It was a downpour. They had to leave the tents. They had to wait, you know, till after the auspicious time. Then wait for another auspicious time to commence the final yagya. So, pratishtha means the basis and support. Just like the projector sitting on top of the chair. The chair is sitting on top of the cloth. The cloth is sitting on top of the rug. The rug is sitting on top of the floor. The floor is on top of the foundation. The foundation is on top of the earth. That's like, you know, a material pratishtha. But when Krishna uses this word pratishtha, it means an existential pratishtha. Just like the rays of the sun exist because of the sun. The rays have their basis and support from the sun. And the sun has its basis and support from the sun god. The sun god has his basis and support in the supreme personality of Godhead. Just read this morning this very nice prayer by the sun god to Lord Vishnu. It was at the Daksha Yagya, and Lord Vishnu had appeared, and the various devas were offering their prayers to Lord Vishnu. And the sun god was saying, my very existence is because of you. My brilliance and effulgence and the light and my ability to sustain the universe, it comes from you, and the universe itself comes from you, and I'm just your servant. And therefore I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So, the pratishtha of Brahman, Krishna says, aham. I am the pratishtha. Brahmano hi pratishtha aham. I'm the basis of impersonal Brahman. So, that's the conclusion, the concluding verse of the whole 14th chapter. All that one might want to know about Prakriti, material nature, can be understood if one understands the pratishtha, the basis and support of material nature. And that's Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is disclosing himself, and as he's disclosing himself, he's disclosing about the living entity, about material nature, about time, about karma, and about himself. Ishvara. He's the controller of all. And all material activity has as its basis Krishna. So that's chapter 14, Bhagavad Gita. And if I can get a little assistance putting this projector on. We'll go through the chapter.
This next one.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead says, Again, I shall declare to you this supreme wisdom, the best of all knowledge, knowing which all the sages have attained the supreme perfection. One can attain to the transcendental nature like my own. Thus established, one is not born at the time of creation, or disturbed at the time of dissolution.
The pure soul becomes conditioned in contact with the superior nature.
Okay, so that was the Mahima section. If we can understand the message of this chapter, we will not be disturbed by dissolution, what to speak of death and taxes. And at the end of our mortal existence, we'll attain the spiritual realm, an eternal association with the personality of Godhead. So it's worth becoming familiar with the message of this chapter. So now this section is how it happens that living entity becomes conditioned from the outset of his material conditional life.
The eternal material substance, or Brahman, is the source of birth. And it is that Brahman that I impregnate, making possible the births of all living beings. It should be understood that all species of life, or some quality, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. Material nature consists of three modes: goodness, passion, and ignorance. When the eternal living entity comes in contact with nature, he becomes conditioned by these modes.
How the modes condition the living entity?
Okay, so quick summary. What just happened? Krishna explained when in contact with material nature, the modes of material nature begin to act upon that living entity. And they condition the living entity, like the person in jail. He's forced to act according to the impulses of the modes of material nature, as if involuntarily. The modes are so strong. And now he's going to detail how those modes of nature condition.
The mode of goodness, being purer than the others, is illuminating, and it frees one from all sinful reactions. Those situated in that mode become conditioned by a sense of happiness and knowledge. The mode of passion is born of unlimited desires and longings, and because of this, the embodied living entity is bound to material, fruitive actions. O son of Bharata, know that the mode of darkness, born of ignorance, is the delusion of all embodied living entities. The results of this mode are madness, indolence, and sleep, which bind the conditioned soul. The mode of goodness conditions one to happiness. Passion conditions one to fruitive action. And ignorance, covering one's knowledge, binds one to madness. Sometimes the mode of goodness becomes prominent, defeating the modes of passion and ignorance. Sometimes the mode of passion defeats goodness and ignorance. And at other times, ignorance defeats goodness and passion. In this way, there is always competition for supremacy.
it's important for us to maintain, like the message of chapter 13, maintain the knowledge that the living entity and property are two different things, or two different entities altogether. We're the conscious being, and matter is acting. So those modes of material nature, it's not us, but when we identify with the body or identify with ourselves with the material nature, we think, that's us. I'm happy. I'm successful. I was defeated. I'm depressed. And so on. We identify with that which we are not. And there's always competition for supremacy within these modes of nature. It's just how material nature works. It's like the weather. Like I just understand the, how your spring season went here in Minneapolis. In March, it was hot. In April, it was cold. In May, it was rainy. You know, today was supposed to be rainy. It was 86 and sunny. Who knows what tomorrow is going to be? Like the modes of nature. If they're always competing for supremacy. That's a core lesson from Bhagavad Gita. So next.
Manifestation of the three modes and how to recognize the predominant mode.
If we want to examine ourselves or those close to us or whatever circumstance in material existence, what are symptoms by which we can know this mode or that mode is ruling or predominating in my life at this particular moment or something? So here's symptoms of the modes of nature.
The manifestations of the mode of goodness can be experienced when all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge.
In the mode of goodness, one can see things in the right position, one can hear things in the right position, and one can taste things in the right position. One becomes cleansed inside and outside. Srila Bhagavatam further enumerates the qualities of the mode of goodness. Mind and sense control, sticking to one's prescribed duty, tolerance, mercy, truthfulness, satisfaction in any condition, faith in the spiritual master, being embarrassed at improper action, simplicity, and humbleness.
This is Krishna's instruction to Uddhava, 11th canto, Uddhava Gita. Then?
When there is an increase in the mode of passion, the symptom, great attachment, fruitive activity, intense endeavor of uncontrollable desire and hankering develop.
Qualities of the mode of passion, material desire, great endeavor, audacity, false pride, sense gratification, dissatisfaction even in gain, considering oneself better than others.
Sounds like the workplace, right? There's more.
Rash eagerness to find, fondness for hearing oneself praise, tendency to ridicule others, advertising one's own prowess, justifying one's actions by one's strength.
Krishna knows his modes of nature. And then, mode of ignorance.
When there is an increase in the mode of ignorance, darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion are manifested.
Quality of the mode of ignorance. Intolerant anger, stinginess, fear and violent hatred, living as a parasite, speaking without scriptural authority. Quarrel and hypocrisy, chronic fatigue, depression, sleeping too much, false expectations, and laziness.
Good music for the motivators.
Result of action within the free will and destination after death.
So we heard there's symptoms of the mode of goodness influencing, mode of passion influencing, mode of ignorance. Now, when there's that influence and there's actions, what's the result in this life and the next? It's very succinctly presented in this chapter.
When one dies in the mode of goodness, he attains the pure higher planets of the great sages. When one dies in the mode of passion, he takes birth among those engaged in fruitive activities. And when one dies in the mode of ignorance, he takes birth in the animal kingdom. The result of pious action is pure and is said to be in the mode of goodness. But action done in the mode of passion results in misery. And action performed in the mode of ignorance results in foolishness. From the mode of goodness, real knowledge develops. From the mode of passion, greed develops. And from the mode of ignorance develop foolishness, madness, and illusion. Those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets. Those in the mode of passion live on the earthly planets. And those in the abominable mode of ignorance go down to the hellish world.
Different destinations, according to the modes of nature. Now this is a bonus. Besides chapter 14, actually, there's the one topic...
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said...
The one topic that receives more attention by Krishna than any other topic in the entire Bhagavad Gita is this, the modes of nature. So this is a quick summary of statements from chapter 17 and chapter 18.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, according to the modes of nature acquired by the embodied soul, one's faith can be of three kinds, in goodness, in passion, or in ignorance. Even the food each person prefers is of three kinds, according to the three modes of material nature. The same is true of sacrifices, austerities, and charity. Now, here are the distinctions between them.
So Krishna is giving a little menu. Modes of nature influence all these different things. So this was set up for the children so they could pick one of these little images, and then the narrator will tell what Krishna says about each of them. Let's start with happiness. Happiness in the modes of nature.
O best of the Bharatas, now please hear from me about the three kinds of happiness by which the conditioned soul enjoys, and by which he sometimes comes to the end of all distress. That which in the beginning may be just like poison, but at the end is just like nectar, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. That happiness which is derived from contact of the senses with their objects, and which appears like nectar at first, but poison at the end, is said to be of the nature of passion. And that happiness which is blind to self-realization, which is delusion from beginning to end, and which arises from sleep, laziness, and illusion, is said to be of the nature of ignorance.
Anybody want to pick one?
Charity.
Charity given out of duty, without expectation of return, at the proper time and place, and to a worthy person, is considered to be in the mode of goodness. But charity performed with the expectation of some return, or with a desire for future results, or in a grudging mood, is said to be charity in the mode of passion. And charity performed at an impure place, at an improper time, to unworthy persons, or without proper attention and respect, is said to be in the mode of ignorance.
Anyone else? Okay.
According to one's existence under the various modes of nature, one evolves a particular kind of faith. Men in the mode of goodness worship the demigods. Those in the mode of passion worship the demons. And those in the mode of ignorance worship ghosts and spirits. One who performs his duty without association with the modes of material nature, without false ego, with great determination and enthusiasm, and without wavering in success or failure, is said to be a worker in the mode of good. The worker who is attached to work and the fruits of work, desiring to enjoy those fruits, and who is greedy, always envious, impure, and moved by joy and sorrow, is said to be in the mode of passion. The worker who is always engaged in work against the injunctions of the scripture, who is materialistic, obstinate, cheating, and expert in insulting others, and who is lazy, always morose, and procrastinating, is said to be a worker in the mode of ignorance.
Here's austerity.
Austerity, performed with transcendental faith by men not expecting material benefits, but engaged only for the sake of the Supreme, is called austerity in goodness. Penance performed out of pride and for the sake of gaining respect, honor, and worship is said to be in the mode of passion. It is neither stable nor permanent. Penance performed out of foolishness, with self-torture, or to destroy or injure others, is said to be in the mode of ignorance.
Okay, so you get the idea.
Tangle is a transformation of earth, but smoke is better than raw wood. And fire is still better, for by fire we can derive the benefits of superior knowledge. Srimad Bhagavatam explains that similarly, passion is better than ignorance, but goodness is best, because by goodness one can come to realize the absolute truth.
This is a Srimad Bhagavatam quote again, comparing the modes of nature. Similar ideas in Bhagavad Gita, but of the three modes, the mode of goodness is best, because from the mode of goodness, one can come to realize the absolute truth. So the Vedas in general promote the quality of goodness, and from the quality of goodness enter into transcendence.
Krishna explains to Uddhava how to change the mode one is situated in. The predominant mode influencing you is determined by the different scriptures you study, teaching habits, your choices, your association, your environment, the time of the day you do things, meditation in different ways, the mantra you chant, the samskara performed, and birth. By constant practice and cultivation, one can situate oneself steadily in a mode of goodness.
Important lesson from Uddhava Gita is the mode of nature that one is influenced by can be changed. It requires knowing the pressure points, like, you know, the where to apply yourself. Can't do too much about the birth item, but these other items can be focused upon through cultivation and practice. One can move to a higher mode of nature.
As the process itself, it is still binding. One better conditioned to feel that he is advanced in knowledge and better than others. Due to a sense of pride and material happiness, repeatedly one may become entangled in birth and death. Repeatedly one may become a philosopher, scientist, or poet with no chance of liberation. Therefore, one must strengthen all the three modes.
Okay, so this is the final section. All of that was extra, wasn't exactly part of chapter 14, but it's teachings about the modes of nature. So now comes the section where Arjuna is going to ask Krishna. First, Krishna is going to declare everyone is moving influence, under the influence of these modes, but one can become liberated. So Arjuna wants to know how.
This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me have easily crossed beyond it.
In the middle
soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. When one properly sees that in all activities, no other performer is at work than these modes of nature, and he knows the supreme law, which is transcendental to all these modes, he attains my spiritual nature. When the embodied being is able to transcend these three modes associated with the material body, he can become free from birth, death, old age, and their distresses, and can enjoy nectar even in this life. Arjuna inquired, Oh my dear Lord, by which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior? And how does he transcend the modes of nature?
There's those three questions. Symptoms, behavior, and how.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, He who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal towards the desirable and the undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, and who has renounced all material activities. Such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature. One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. And I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness.
End of chapter. So, how does one transcend the modes of nature? By remaining unfailingly engaged in devotional service, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. One at once transcends the modes of nature and attains to the level of Brahman. And then Krishna says, and I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman and the constitutional position of unlimited happiness. So, chapter 14 has now been summarized, and it took longer than I had intended. I intended to have something that was shorter and to have like lots and lots of time for your nice questions. So, get the lights on. And see if there's any comments or questions. Yes.
Maharaj, sometimes we know that we are acting in such a mode, like sometimes we are happy after we get some position or money. And sometimes we know that we are angry or very lazy. So at that time, how do we come out of that specific position?
Well, recognizing that you're under the influence of a particular mode of nature is the beginning of getting out of the influence of that mode of nature. Say it the other way around. When we're not in a position to get out, we're just moved by that mode of nature. We don't even know what's going on. We're just being carried away. So that recognition is a form of knowledge, and with knowledge comes detachment. Withdraw in that moment of detachment, withdraw identification from the modes, and place attention or awareness or place your seat of consciousness upon the self, that which is eternal. So you can be the observer of what's going on with happiness, fruitive, or morose, none of which are you. Identify with the eternal self, and then the eternal self has a constitutional position in relation to Krishna. Those are steps, but if you become accustomed to those steps in the quality of goodness, reflecting upon the circumstances of life, it becomes 1, 2, 3. It's like, it happens in a flash. In short, think of Krishna. But there are little steps in thinking of Krishna. Nasate vidite bhavo, na bhavo vidite sattaha. Ubayor api drishtam tastranyos tattva darshivi. Krishna says in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita that Tattvadarshi, the seer of the truth, doesn't place value in the asat, whether it's this one, whatever the variety is, this one, that one, or the other one, or a combination, doesn't place much value in it. It places value in sat. So withdraw consciousness from asat and place consciousness from the realm of sat. And Krishna is the basis of that sat. He's Om Tat Sat, Supreme Absolute Truth. Or Sat Chitananda Vigraha, fullness of form and knowledge eternally. So when you see there's this pause in immediately engaging, like reactive engagement with the modes of nature, it's a mode of goodness, pause. And in that little pause space, thought of Krishna should go. And when your thought of Krishna becomes practiced, it's your shelter. And the other is, there's detachment. It's not you. You can still act in relation to whatever that is, but you can act in a manner of choosing what action you'll do rather than just reacting mindlessly. it's a practice. Abhyasa yoga. Yuktena. Chetasa nanya gamino. It takes practice. But it's not a mechanical practice, it's a natural practice. It's something that comes naturally to the soul. The spirit that helps most is the spirit of service unto the Supreme. And that's what our mantra is. Krishna, please engage me in your service. Yes?
Yeah, first of all, welcome to Minnesota.
Thank you. Thank you for the warm weather, too.
It always helped us, you know, people that we are, you know, ignorant and don't know much. I've got a couple of questions. One is, as you explain yourself, Swami, the Bhagwan, Paramatma, and Brahma, you explain that, but why three and it ends up, I think, anyway, to one God?
Yeah, there's one God. We had this discussion last time I was here, but we'll do it again. Why don't you move to the side so I can see Mahashakti and we don't, like, you know.
He's sleeping.
No, he's not. He's in your shadow and that's, you know.
Oh, same thing.
There's a very nice verse from First Canto, Chapter 3 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Vedanta, you know what Vedanta is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Vedanta, the end of all the Vedas, Vedanta, like Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta, tattva vidas, tattvam yaj jnanam, advayam, the advaita, the non-dual, those who know the Vedas and know the non-dual substance have concluded that Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabdyate. That is, this, the absolute truth is realized in three different features or aspects. Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Now your question was why? Well, the answer is because that is the absolute truth in fullness. That's why. But just like, as an example, there's the sunshine. There's the sun planet from which the sunshine comes. And there's the sun god who presides in the sun planet. And to know the sunshine is incomplete knowledge. To know the sun planet is more complete because it includes the sunshine and the sun planet. But there's also the sun god. Complete knowledge is to know the person of the sun god. Then automatically one will also know about the sun planet and the sunshine. So the absolute truth is realized in different features according to the disposition or the prapadyante, the type, the mood of surrender unto the Supreme or the regard that one has for the Supreme. Now suppose one has a disgust for material existence, but doesn't want to surrender to God as a person. This Brahman feature is there. It's not material, but there's not surrender to the Supreme Person either. So it's a place for those persons to occupy, a tattva for them to enter into. Then there are those that are strongly attracted by the knowledge, the omniscience of God. Not just the existence of God, but His all-knowing capacity. His chit potency. Those persons are fond of meditating or striving to realize the feature of the Lord in the heart. The Paramatma feature. And there are those that simply want to love the personality of God and engage in His service in varieties of ways according to whatever His pleasure is. Not just knowing, but loving. and loving activity. That's a complete understanding of these three features, because one who knows the personal feature of the Supreme will also know his expansion as Paramatma, will also know his existential potency as Brahman. But that's the privilege or prerogative of those who surrender unto him. There's those that don't want to surrender unto him, but they don't like the features of duality of this material realm. So that's another explanation as to why there are different dispositions of living entities towards the Supreme, and so there are different realms or different stages of realization for them. But as you say, there's one Supreme, but that one Supreme has different stages of realization of him. There's a complete, less complete, and even less complete, but still of the spiritual realm, not in contact with karma and modes of nature, and even time. That which is created and destroyed has nothing to do with the realm of Brahman. I'll go back. But there's a chit potency, conscious feature of the Supreme, and that's the attraction of the yogis meditating on Paramatma. Then there's the desire for love and loving activity and service unto the Supreme. And that aspect of the Lord that is realized is the Bhagavan feature. Although it's one entity in different features, one Advaya Tattva, one non-dual nature.
So it is because of the people, how to approach and what they want and what they... That's why it is that way?
Well, that's one... I gave an explanation in that regard because you asked why.
Yeah.
And the why question has an answer. There are different living entities, and the Lord shows different features of himself according to that nature of the living entity. But from the other side, from the Lord's side, there are aspects of him. He's not homogenized. You know, he has diversities of that are non-dual. That's his nature. And he's glorified by the personified Vedas in that way.
And I have one personal question.
Sure.
It was a while ago in Chaka Prabhuji's home, you know, we were having kirtan. And then I was really, you know, taken with that. I mean, I was really...
absorbed.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden I opened my eyes and I just see Krishna in front of me.
Wow.
I mean, it is not hallucination. I just talked to many people and all that. I saw that the only human mistake that I made is just look down to see where is he standing, because there were lots of people sitting there. I just wanted to see where is he standing, and then
disappear. Okay, that's not a question.
No, it was a question for myself.
You're just sharing.
You know, just sharing, and also. Is there a, I mean, of course, it's a good thing for me that Krishna was...
Good fortune. Krishna's mercy. You know what your destination is now.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they asked when would you... You know, some they gave me, you know, a hard time, but, you know, they're sitting next to me and all that stuff. So. But I think I'm going in the right direction. I had a job offer from the government in a different place. I found out that there will be no devotees. There will be nothing in
no association.
Fort Gordon in Georgia. So I canceled that, although there was a lots of money and all that involved. But I said, well, if I'm going to put materialistic thing in money, then what?
Krishna's going to disappear more than what just happened.
So that was a good lesson.
Okay.
There was a lot of money to describe how to justify it.
He was the one that gave me some information in the beginning, like that is what is going on. Uh-huh. And I followed it and I got the offer, but then I thought, well, but he wanted money.
Yes.
I just wanted to clarify my understanding about getting free from the modes of material.
Sure.
So, since we are always in the mode of material nature, and this is happening moment to moment, the only way we can get free is to focus our mind, or focus our
consciousness.
On our constitutional position, so us as servants of Krishna, moment to moment.
Yeah, but it's not mechanical focus, it's a natural focus because of attachment. Like you're sitting here, but you know, I can imagine, you're not oblivious to what your children are up to. You're feeling that they're safe, and but if you knew that they were not safe, your mind wouldn't be. You'd be with your kids because they're your kids. Where our attachments are, that's where our mind goes. So the mind focused upon the Supreme comes from a genuine, natural attachment. Asakti in Sanskrit. Coming after asakti is bhava. Coming before asakti is ruchi, a taste. And coming before taste is steadiness and our devotion. It's coming before that is impurities and trying to remove those impurities. Then steadiness, then taste, then attachment. So where there's attachment, the mind is there. Always. Because we're attached. And it's not circumstantial, based upon material cause, or condition or circumstance. It's constitutional. It's natural to us. So before we're awake to our natural state, we're dealing with our conditioned state. So it's vidhi, we're following rules and regulations to get us to that cleansed and natural state. And when that natural state is there, then there's attachment. Attachment for the activities of devotion, and then in the more mature state, attachment to the object of devotion. And then, outbursts of ecstatic emotion in relation to the object. And then, you know, different ecstasies, mixing of ecstasies, and that becomes prema. Naturally. So the whole process is a natural one, as I'm emphasizing here. Oops, so it's not just, you know, constantly bringing the mind. We do that when we're chanting because the mind is restless, chanchala. We want the mind to become fixed. So we practice abhyasa. Constantly bringing the mind to Krishna. So that the mind can become purified by contact with Krishna, who is the Supreme Pure. So mind becomes pure gradually by that practice. Yeah.
So in a transcendental person, in a person who is in transcendence, is the soul then directing the spirit soul directing the actions and the modes or
Krishna. Rishikena, Rishikesha. Sevanam. Krishna takes charge of your senses. Like, say a pure devotee. Take it off with the first person. Say in the case of Shukadeva Goswami, or the case of Maharaj Parikshit. When Maharaj Parikshit became angry, that's not Maharaj Parikshit. He took a snake and put the snake around the neck of a sage who was in trance, in meditation. He insulted him cruelly, you know, rudely. That's not Maharaj Pariksit. It was induced by the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the purpose of he would be cursed and then he would hear Srimad Bhagavatam and he would go back to Godhead with his mind fixed upon. And we could now have Srimad Bhagavatam. Our acharyas explain in that way. But where the position of purity is attained is where the senses are fully under the control of the master of the senses. From our side, we only want to engage our senses in service of the master of the senses. From his side, he controls our senses. He protects us from misuse of our senses by always keeping them engaged. You know, it's like your children. If there's mischief, one may be a little mischievous. The solution is some nice activity that's wholesome, and mischievous activity, you worry about it because the wholesome activity is there. And he's in good association, and so you're not worried. Maybe that tendency is there, but it doesn't come out because there's wholesome activity. Bhakti works the same way. And gradually and eventually, even the tendency is gone. The capacity to be marginal is always with the living entity. But when the connection with Krishna becomes so strong, so pure, the others can't act. Yeah.
Can this happen instantly? Or is
it gradual? Generally, it's gradual. But yes, it can happen instantly. Prabhupada's answer to that question, Swamiji, how long does it take to become Krishna conscious? Prabhupada, less than a second. And in that less than a second, two things. One must give up sense gratification and tendency for mental speculation. Generally, because living entities are prone to these things, therefore, generally the process is gradual. But how long does it take? Less than a second. A moment. Yes.
Normally, like a lot of times when we think of someone who's beyond the modes of nature, we get the sense that they don't experience, you know, any ups and downs and things like that. But I thought that was interesting that Krishna's answer to Arjuna's question was that they don't hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they're present, or long for them when they disappear. So it seems like they're, in a sense, going through those things.
Well, even the very language that says illumination, that's like, you know, that's a plus, it's not a minus.
Yeah.
Each of the identifying the object, so the identification of the object is from a position of neutrality. In other words, happiness, that sounds like, you know, that's positive. But again, just like this earlier discussion, we can recognize this is a happiness born of the quality of goodness. Like, let's say, the happiness that comes from doing a good deed. Making some sacrifice for the benefit of another person. We all know what that feeling is. It feels good. But one who is situated in transcendence knows that's the mode of goodness conditioning the living entity into a sense of identifying with, I just did something that's good. And it binds the performer. So they're neutral to that kind of happiness. That the happiness that they're not neutral towards is the happiness of service to Krishna. And the happiness of service to Krishna, it may mean, like the gopis, giving dust from their feet, knowing that by giving dust from their feet, they'll have to go to hell, and they're okay with that because it's the happiness of Krishna. But it's the happiness of Krishna one isn't neutral towards.
Because sometimes it seems like the devotees get frustrated that I'm going through all these ups and downs. But really it seems like it's more how you see it rather than what you experience.
The position from which you're where your shelter is. The position from which you're seeing things. Are you situated in Sat or are you situated in Asat? Look at Prahlad Maharaj, and he could have said, "Oh, look at this terrible situation I'm going through." That's not how he was seeing. Yes.
Connected to that question, Maharaj. Sometimes in our interaction with people and objects, material objects, we especially think that, I'm interacting in a proper way. You prepare mentally. And then, so after the action is performed, you see the result, then you realize actually it was out of passion. So there is a thinking there.
Out of passion in the sense of being the enjoyer of the object.
Yeah, it's not so apparently present when the thought is, okay, I'm doing this in a proper way.
I think I understand. If you're making a comment, your comment is, even when we're trying to act in knowledge, there's a tendency to be the enjoyer of the activity, and we're oblivious to the fact that, in fact, we're trying to be the enjoyer of the activity.
It's very hard to understand that initially, unless you see the result.
Well, unless you're attached to Krishna, I would say. Because even you see the result, and you do it again, and you do it again, and you do it again. That's conditioning. And freedom from conditioning is not just finally you get it. It's take shelter of Krishna. The nature of knowledge, jnana, in and of itself, is insufficient for uprooting tendencies of trying to be the enjoyer. Knowledge alone is not enough. Shelter in Krishna is the solution. This is a discussion that very exquisite discussion and at the beginning of the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the discussion between Maharaj Pariksit and Shukadeva Goswami about the hellish planets that are described at the end of the fifth canto. Maharaj Pariksit wants to know, such a horrible, horrible thing has to happen to people who are sinful. What can be done to help them not have to undergo that suffering? And part of the answer is knowledge alone is not enough. We know something that we all have, without exception, there are certain things that we know that if we do them, they're detrimental. We shouldn't do them. We think about it very carefully. We consider. We make a determination. In knowledge, I won't do this something. We go and do that something. The opposite. Here's something that something I should do or something that I shouldn't do. It's called anishta tapakti. Unsteady in our practices because it takes full shelter in Krishna, not just knowledge. That's just catching that slip that you described.
But how about things which you generally, I also tend to use that. I'm dovetailing this in Krishna's.
That tendency of dovetailing has its efficacy to the degree that we're taking shelter in Krishna. To the degree that we're not taking shelter in Krishna and just it's authorized, Prabhu, kind of dovetail, then we're not getting a karmic reaction, but we're not getting elevation either.
So you judge by seeing how much satisfied...
Proportionate to one's submission unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there's elevation beyond the modes of nature and beyond our conditioning. Proportionate to one's surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyone else? Yes.
Comparative to the, I understand that ultimately we have to transcend the modes of nature. But considering that mostly we are in the mode of darkness and passion, would it be like a good judgment call to make if we are in mode of ignorance to go for passion?
A good judgment call, you know, if you're in bed, it's a good judgment call to get out of bed. Go take a bath and, you know, put on clean clothes and do something. But better than that is, you know, get up and chant rounds and, you know, do the activities and make something clean and do something in the quality of goodness.
I have a question.
Concerning
children in U.S., like the youths and the children here going to school and, you know, exposed to internet and all those things. I mean, what do you suggest would be in order to, you know, direct them to the path of transcendence?
Well, a few comments. One is, it's not just the U.S. If you think it's different, if my children were living in India, they wouldn't have those same enticements. You know, you're an illusion. It's universal. And or getting there in a rapid pace. A lot depends upon what the mother and father of the child are prepared to do to provide an alternative to that, what you just described and more. So there are alternatives. Homeschooling is an alternative. Even in homeschooling, children see that other children are doing those things. But, you know, ultimately, it's just like with us. If there's a greater satisfaction, the lesser satisfaction, the lesser desire, it's important space. I can say with joy in my heart that there are devotee children that share with me, I know what the other kids my age are doing, and I choose I don't want to do that. And I feel I'm protected by my parents, by my teachers, by my spiritual master, by those that are setting such a nice example and giving me all this care and shelter and protection. You know, it's joyful to hear that. They're not like saying, you know, nice things, and when you're not looking, they're doing not nice things. I mean, to some extent, that goes on. But there are those that are—they're so satisfied. I get letters from teenagers that say their friends are encouraging them to do something that would shock their parents. I mean, I don't even tell you some of the things that they're. These are. Not just friends at school, these are other children of devotee parents, and they were going to go do such and such, and they were making a plan, and they got right to the point of doing it, and they said, no, I can't do this. Because Maharaj wouldn't like it. And I couldn't hide it from them and just do that. So that they knew the reaction was going to be, oh, you're not fun anymore. And it's like, you know, they shunned that teenager. So that they can live with that, but they couldn't live with the other. And they felt, in the end, they felt, I was protected. So loving relationships with wholesome devotees and wholesome friends is protection from that stuff. When there's real satisfaction in loving relationships and devotional life and devotional activity. And some are, you know, on the fence. Depends on the nature of the individual. I just got a letter from a girl that just, she just turned 12, and I've known her since she's 4 years old, and she just wrote, you know, such a letter to me. My friends are doing this and that and the other thing, and you know, I don't like doing this and that and the other thing, but you know, I read, she wrote, I read karmic books. I don't like the video games and all the other Facebook and all that other stuff. I don't like that. You know, I don't, but I'm not really strong in my chanting. What should I do? So, as you're concerned, a wholesome child is also concerned. And so they need the right association, you know, those 10 things. They need the right association. Need, you know, some support to do their chanting and studying Prabhupada's books and along with the other karmi books they're reading. Because okay, now school's over and I've got all the summer thing ahead of me, and how am I going to use the summer? Seeking guidance for spiritual progress. If in the home, create an atmosphere, not by forcing, but create a inviting atmosphere that encourages your children, I'm saying this for all of you, that, you know, spiritual activity is fun, it's nice. You do it with us as your parents, and ideally you have nice devotee friends. You can do those things with nice devotee friends. So because friendship is important for children, so wholesome friendship is important for your children to have wholesome friendship relationships with. And as a community, you grow that, and your parents and the children together as a community. It's very difficult if it's just insular, it's just you, your wife, and your child or children. But with the community, it's much easier. Provided there's, you know, a level of seriousness of commitment from the other families. Yes?
Coming back to the basic question of
modes of nature.
Chanting is supposed to be done in the either mode of goodness or beyond that. But at times it gets into like more of passion, like I need to finish off. I need to complete this.
Yeah.
That's because we are dealing with so many things. How do we get back to the, you know, goodness or even beyond that?
By, in general, framing your life in the quality of goodness besides just the activity of chanting. And then when you're chanting, that tendency, because you've framed your life in the quality of goodness, will be the mode of goodness. And it's also predicated on your relationship with Krishna. If the relationship with Krishna is my order supplier, then when I'm doing my worship or my activity in relation to Krishna, it's fruitive. Yes? You know, passion breeds passion. Goodness breeds goodness. So it's not as easy as just snapping your fingers and say, okay, now I'm going to make a mode of goodness, and it's done. It's a cultivation. Yes.
Added to that, you know, because we are working in an organization that expected to be at a certain level, which, you know, cultivates some more of passion more than.
This is the challenge of grihastha life. How to work for Krishna. And in a work environment that's very much infested with the quality of passion, and how to work for Krishna instead. But, you know, that's a challenge for a householder, but it's a challenge of life. How to be in the modes of nature, but not influenced by those modes of nature. And the answer is you work for Krishna. And that's the art of work. Is it possible to be in a work environment that's very intensely competitive, meaning passionate, and not be moved by the mode of passion? Yes, it's possible. It requires very strong Krishna consciousness. And strong Krishna consciousness doesn't come cheaply. Moving with the modes of nature, that's easy. Like, you know, there's the Ganges moving downstream, and you just jump in the Ganges, and you're downstream.
I have one question, request from you, Swamiji. For all the devotees, when you are not here, or somebody leading the rest of the devotees are not here, Gaurashakti Prabhu is really very much helpful and he has got great knowledge. And so I've been begging him, he wants to leave Minneapolis. So I've been requesting him, you know, 1,000 times, like, not to leave. What have you got to say? If Swamiji requests, can you see it?
He already told me that he was going to leave. And I didn't, you know, you weren't around to be there. You told me, you say, you know.
No, it's just because he's so useful, so helpful, and such a great devotee. I mean, you know, I have learned a lot from him. I am sure many other devotees have learned. So, he's going for some, I don't know, again, materialistic thing, I don't know.
You want to put the projector down? Off. Off.
Let's switch the frame.
Off?
Off. I don't think it's an appropriate forum to go into what you just went into, so I'm going to just pass it by. Anything else? Yes.
Is it due to desire that a person acquires a particular mood, or how does?
Well, it's due to association, and association, behind association there's desire. So, sangat sanjayate kama. Prabhupada quotes this verse from, section of a verse from chapter 2 Bhagavad Gita, are the modes of nature with which we're conditioned is due to the association we keep. So, select association. If you'd like to change the quality, one of those 10 items that Krishna was telling Uddhava, one of the key items to address is your association. This also, I said it earlier, regulating or framing your life in that quality. Let's say somebody wants to be an Olympic athlete. Oh, a lot of discipline. A lot of, you know, intense activity. And they go and associate with others who are doing that intense activity together. They, you know, they train and discipline and by association. Or somebody wants to make Prabhupada's example, you know, there's an engineering society or the businessman society or the whatever it is, society, there's associations of people because of like interest. So if we want to make our quality of life more towards the quality of goodness, associate with persons who have that quality and make, you know, deep relationships with those people. Not just like, you know, call them up on the phone every now and then. But make deep relationships with those people. And that will change the quality of your life. Devotionally and, you know, within the modes of nature as well. Sangat sanjayate kama. Our desires or our the modes of nature with which we're influenced has a lot to do with our association. Like, another example of the same thing, how bhakti awakens, the stages of bhakti, there's adau shraddha, tata, sadhu sangha. And when you associate with sadhus, what do? You do what sadhus do. Bhajana kriya, engage in devotional activity in the association of sadhus. And done properly, you do them in the quality of goodness. Just like this question about chanting sometimes, you know, just to get it done. But, so that may be one's mode of nature, and that may be how, you know, there's like a lot going on, and that's circumstance. But ideally, because it's such a sacred part of my life, I do with great attention. I frame my life in that way. And other things cannot happen, that's okay. That has to happen. Because it's so important. And that value comes from association.
Then, is association under my control?
Huh?
Association under my control, do I go for... even my association is being desired by me, or...
Well... there's different factors to action. Ultimately, super soul is there, but you're not a zero. You're not everything, but you're not a zero either. Your circumstance may be such and such, whatever that is. But I desire more the quality of goodness in my life. It doesn't happen like, okay, I desire it, and there you go. But it's a gradual cultivation. That's what Krishna is telling Uddhava. By practice and cultivation, one can move from the position that I'm now conditioned by, the mode of nature that's now conditioning me, to another mode. So desire is, the free will choice is operative, not a zero. Krishna's sanction, so many conditionings, so many reactions to my past free will choices. You know, a lot of things acting on me. But let me stay fixed on course. I'm confident of Krishna's help. And even the external circumstances can change. But to speak of the mode of nature. And one of the ways to strengthen and cultivate more deeply that free will choice that you really want is choose the right association. And that means, you know, like this 12-year-old girl that wrote to me, I'm going to explain to her, here's the consequence of reading Karmi novels. Because she's asked it in a very mature way. I mean, the letter was very, very clear. She knows what's going on. She knows what... practically speaking, she's already said, I know what you're going to say, please say it. So I'm going to say it, you know, in a kind way, not in a harsh way. And give her the choices that she knows that she really wants to make, but her conditioning is through that bad association at school, she's reading all this other stuff. And, you know, association. And it's behind that if there is a desire. So, same for us. Krishna sees our desire. He sees our conditioning. He sees our spiritual desires. And he reciprocates with that. Yes?
There's a few classes where Prabhupada uses that bhajan from Narottam Das Thakur, where he says Krishna Kama Kamarpane, and he speaks about how that those different things, the lust and all these things, can be actually used in Krishna service. Is that not for us at this stage, or is that something that we should be conscious of and striving for, but not be irresponsible with?
Well, that's the dovetail program. And it's certainly doable. But there's an alternative to the dovetail program, you know, like anger, you know, control anger. That's the... And if we're on the platform of Hanuman, then we can get angry at Ravan and burn the city down. But if we're not on the platform of Hanuman, we, you know, try to engage anger and lust and so on, then we can, you know, find ourselves in a big soup. Be careful. When you play with fire, be careful. If devotion is very strong and one is an advanced devotee, there are many things that one can do that for one who is not advanced, one can't do. One is better to be on the safe side of regulative vaidhi sadhana bhakti. How about anything more from the ladies' side? I heard a lot about your wonderful questions. I'm intimidating you two. Okay. Yes.
In Bhagavatam, I never read Bhagavatam, but generally know that. In Bhagavatam, they said like between Gopikas and Krishna, there was like this pranaya or something like that.
Sounds like you rub your head already. To the deep end of the pool.
Yeah, why did they use that? Like, I heard somebody saying that he's like, if they are in deep meditation, the jiva is with God, that is what they want to meet. And like this, the association between this Gopikas and Krishna.
I don't follow. Do you understand what he's asking, Shakti? He asks me later, okay?
Yes.
All right. Okay, we'll end there. And we'll take prasadam, yes?